Yet once more, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shake not only the earth, but also heaven. Hebrews 12, verse 26. God the Creator moves himself and everything, but God the Recreator increases the movements of the universe. He expands them and penetrates deeper into them. He brings them to a climax. In creation, God showed himself tremendously in strength and full of majesty. But in the recreation of all things, God will one day reveal his greatest act of majestic strength, his mightiest victory, his astonishing universal power in terrifying disturbances. These were the things the author of the letter to the Hebrew Christians was thinking about when he wrote our text. Oh, that man was able to say so much in few words. He had heard God's footsteps rumble across the earth and noticed God's raging storm winds, which at the end of days will shake all the trees and strike all the strongholds of man. He knew that God was getting ready for the shaking of the world, but he also knew that his movement and the noise that God would make, and had already made, was there for man and because of man, as God had created him and in Christ Jesus had brought him back again to himself as a son which was lost and found again. The Church of Christ is the goal of God's shaking. It is for her that God shakes heaven and earth. For her he touches the mountains so that they smoke. Psalm 104 verse 32 and 144 verse 5. It is for the Church that he crushes the age-old rocks. For her that he changes the order of the universe. And that is, besides the terror, also the consolation of his words. Does God really make such a clamor, such a shaking for that little group of people? Indeed, the author of this letter said, and he rejoiced in the fact that he was a child of his time. For I am a son of the new day, he said. I belong to the Church of the New Testament. I have experienced the shaking, the clamor, the storm wind, the terror of the day of Pentecost. And this day of Pentecost tells me that God, my God, is working on the conclusion of world history. Yet once more God will move the heaven and the earth. Yet once more. For earlier already, God had caused some movements. Already centuries before the author of this letter lived, God, as father of his people, had touched and moved creation for that people. It was in that powerful moment of world history, when God adopted Israel as his people, when he gave his law on Sinai, the Mount of Terror, that his voice had moved the earth. Then his voice had moved the earth. For God had revealed himself at Mount Sinai, and it was his voice which burst out with the tremendous sound of thunder and lightning. His voice had moved the earth at the giving of the law at Sinai. The earth? But is that not an exaggeration? Is that not saying too much? Yes and no. In a certain sense, it is indeed saying too much. Mount Sinai, that gray mountain, was indeed a massive block of granite, by which the tents of Israel's army were no more than a few white flecks. Seen from an imminent height of lightning, it was yet nothing in comparison to the surface of the entire earth. It was only a small bump, a very small ripple in the crust of the globe. Let Sinai smoke and tremble, let the mountain shake, but the earth, the entire earth, doesn't even vibrate because of it. And yet, when Sinai's mountain trembled, the man who acknowledged in this the shaking of the earth did not exaggerate. For there is still another way to measure the mighty power of a movement than that of the man who measures the intensity of an earthquake by a seismograph. There is also the poet who feels the strength of a movement in the spiritual world. And more than such a poet is the man of faith. For when he knows, my God is here, he feels the trembling of the earth under his footsteps. And even when he does not hear a sigh, he is greatly amazed, for he knows that God is at work. He knows that the consuming fire is present, the roaring lion is here, the Almighty reveals himself. Thus it is possible, without exaggeration, in subjection to the sensitivity of God's approach, with the perception of a prophet's heart, to say with Psalm 77, "When the waters, all assembled, saw thee, God, they writhed and trembled. Fear convulsed their mighty sweep, terror shook the hidden deep. Clouds poured rain, with thunders crashing, on all sides thy arrows flashing. When thy hand its lightnings hurled, thou didst rock and shake the world." Thus also Psalm 114 could ask, "Why so afraid? Why do you run, O sea? And Jordan, why do you turn back and flee at Israel's vindication? Why, mountains, do you skip like frightened lambs? Why, hills, are you upset like shivering lambs in fear and desolation?" In the same courageous consciousness as the psalmist, Deborah also knew that God and God's earth sympathized with the tumults of war. She also dared to say, "Lord, when thou didst go out from Seir, when thou didst march from the field of Edom, the earth trembled, also the heaven poured, the clouds also poured water." Judges 5 verse 4. Now did anyone ever think that the psalmist stated too much when he sang in Psalm 68, "When through the desert's solitude, thou to thy people's multitude didst show a path to travel, the rain poured down, the earth did quake, yes, even Sinai's base did shake before the God of Israel." Oh no, that is no exaggeration, for all these songs about leaping mountains, trembling earth, and opened heavens speak from this great consideration of faith. God goes along with his people. Those wandering Israelites in the wilderness were perhaps a despised band of vagrants in the eyes of man, but God said of that people that they were kings of the universe. He revealed that all the powers of creation had to be unleashed for their redemption. He maintained that dust had to serve the spirit and the earth had to come to the aid of the people called to heaven. This is the glorious realization that the deliverance of a lost people, of a handful of outcasts, is actually the greatest miracle in the world. When God puts himself to that, all of creation has to show its agreement, so that the mountains tremble and the heavens cry out that there is no greater thing in the universe than the redemption of a people which was nothing in itself. Indeed, when you have understood this very well, you also know why the author of this letter to the Hebrews was so very grateful that God did not stop at Mount Sinai, but went on from Sinai to Canaan, from Canaan to Jerusalem, from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, from Bethlehem to Golgotha, and from Golgotha to, indeed, to where? To Jerusalem? No, to the whole world. For when the Spirit of Pentecost poured himself out in Jerusalem, he sought the world. Behold, says our text, God goes on from the Old to the New Testament. In that new covenant, you also are included, you Christians of today. You were born and adopted into it, and that new covenant is far more glorious than the old. This is clear from many things, but you can also understand the greater glory of the New Testament over the old from the fact that the Old Testament made a lot of noise, while the New Covenant caused a rushing in the world and will yet bring a shudder upon the shrinking earth that is much greater. That shudder will cause a great woe and will also give greater strength to bear than the smoking and trembling Sinai at the giving of the law under Moses. When the Old Covenant was inaugurated, God threw a stone into the water, and the circle which was formed by that stone was large. But in the New Covenant, God threw a stone into the water, and the circle is growing much larger, much greater. The waters are stirred and no longer come to rest. God has thrown fire on the earth by the cross of Christ and by the outpouring of the Spirit. That fire cannot be compared to the loose arrows of some flashing lightnings around Mount Sinai, for it puts all the world on fire. It prevails everywhere. It touches also the universe, all the movable things. Nothing stops that fire. Even God can no longer stop it. The old covenant touched one spot on the earth that trembled under the voice of God. But a new covenant causes a shudder not only to the earth, but also to the visible heaven. Clouds and skies, sun, moon and stars, all the universe has to come via birth pangs to renewal. Why? For no other reason than the triumphal passage of God's people. For just as Israel had to reach its destination, so God's New Testament congregation has to reach its goal in its perfect glorification. For God wants to see whatever eternal power and beauty of spirit will be revealed in it. His children must descend via all the heavens to give the hand to him and to dwell on a new earth, which is to be served by all as a theater of God's greatest work, the work of redemption. For this reason, that greater strength of this future movement of all things above those shakings of Mount Sinai is so very moving. For the scorned, trampled, and despised church knows that God will henceforth demolish the roof from above our heads in an even more terrible way than all the enemies had ever wanted to do it. But he will do it, because this house is not glorious enough for us. Whoever becomes homeless in such a way is richer than any king. Thus the church waits for the tearing down of the world, for the disturbance of the universe, for the shaking of the whole creation. For its new heaven and earth have to become the temple of their spiritual life, which will find its glory in holiness. Are you wondering if that can be seen? Oh no, for it is only a matter of faith. When the author wrote this letter to his small group of despised and persecuted Christians, it appeared as bleak as in the days of the prophet Haggai, who stood at a job site somewhere in Jerusalem, which seemed not to prosper. I am referring to the building of the temple, which the Jews built in the holy city after their return from the Babylonian exile. When those Jews wept that they could never build a temple as beautiful as that of Solomon, even when they had scraped all their withered precious things together, the prophet Haggai said, "Be quiet. The beauty and meaning of a temple does not lie in its external forms, but in the internal, spiritual power." The question was not, what will bring the people inside of it, but rather, what will God obtain from it? The main point is not what flesh can build onto a temple, but what the Spirit builds out of the temple. And if you handful of Jews, put the emphasis on the invisible, then there would never have been a temple as this one. For from this temple, from these times, from your restored service of God, will henceforth dawn the age of the Messiah. The Christ is coming, and he will conquer the world. Your Messiah, O Israel, will touch the whole world. When he comes, God will not only move the earth, but also heaven for him. Not only the sea, as in former days the Red Sea and the Jordan River, but also the dry land. Everything, indeed, everything has to be put into motion for him. And since that shaking will touch everything and will not bypass anything, it will also be the last. For a greater shake of movable things is not possible. This is, Church of Christ, the promise which God has given you. Haggai drank strength from it in dark days. God himself, according to the text, takes up the promise again. He does that now, that is, with an eye to this present dispensation. And you may wait for its fulfillment. For when Haggai said that the movement which will come into this dispensation includes everything, then no second can follow it. Once, no more, God can move nature yet, for the things of the Spirit. For this reason, this word, yet once more, points to the chains of movable things. It designates them with infallible certainty. Everything that can be removed from its place, while it is movable, must be moved from its place. This means, according to the exact meaning of the text, God's promise is certain for his concerned and persecuted church, which so often has to move away from its place in the world. Now then, congregation, have you seen your riches? Do you dare to act upon those words? And do you feel the heavy burden of the word of the last days? Yet once more, and then never again? Also, this year's Day of Pentecost is an episode of The Last Things.